tomorrow is the centenary of the birth of one of the greats of Kerry, really, one of the greats of sports writing and journalism in general in this country, and that is Con Houlihan. 1925, the winter of 1925, when he was born. With me on the line to talk about him and his legacy this morning, I want your views and your comments on Con's legacy and his contribution to Irish life, and particularly to sporting life and to journalism. With me is Ian O'Riordan, who's an Irish Times sports journalist writing on athletics, and of course a friend of Con. Frank Greeley, another good friend of Con's, organises an annual remembrance for him in the Phoenix Park every year. The editor of Irish Running Magazine since 1981. And we have Jimmy Deanahan, former deputy and minister, of course, and participated in the documentary about Con Houlihan in 2004. Good morning to all of you, and thanks for joining us on the programme. Ian, if I can start with you, it's a nice way to remember him, isn't it? Marking his birth rather than his passing.
It is, Gerry. Thanks for having us on here. Yeah, I think Con referenced that line himself about being born in the winter of 1925. And I think he referenced himself somewhere along the course of his life that one way to remember your heroes is not the year that they died, but the year that they were born. He always felt that was a landmark moment for a whole variety of reasons. And Con certainly had that. I think he referenced it was a blizzard, a night of a blizzard in Castle Island. And not forgetting that he always spelled Castle Island with two words, Castle and Island, and anybody who misspelled it by using it as one word, which it is used today, well, God help him. So, yeah, always incredibly proud of his Kerry roots, obviously, and lived in Castle Island most of his life. He didn't move to Dublin until he was well into his 40s, and teached for many years in Kerry, and loved going back to Kerry. So, look, I mean, he's going to be forever associated, I suppose, with Kerry football. But I think in terms of the context of sport, I mean, people forget he wrote a lot about football, about soccer, about rugby as well, and had a great love of athletics. I mean, I think of all the sports that Con could write about, when it came to athletics, he had an incredibly natural understanding, and obviously writing about many, many great runners such as Gerry Kieran and like that. But we could go on at that, but I think it is very important to mark the centenary of his birth, because I don't think there'll be another writer like Con Houlihan.
He just had this incredible gift to bring the humanity into it, the drama into it, and he had an amazing way with the English language, Ian.
Yeah, well, that's it. I mean, he was a teacher originally, so I think he was devoted to the English language and grammar in particular, and he was almost evangelical in terms of how you should create a sentence and all of that, and the way he wrote about sport was, I mean, it was unique. I mean, you forget about it as well, that sports reporting in, say, the 70s and 80s was a bit formulaic. People kind of all did the same thing. They'd write a match report and who scored this and who scored that, and they'd all go home happy. But what made Con different, I suppose, was, well, so many things. But first of all, if it was an All-Ireland final in Croke Park, he wouldn't be sitting in the press box. He'd watch it in the canal end in one of the terraces with all the fans to get the proper reaction of what people were really thinking of the game and what was happening in terms of who was scoring what. And it was, of course, he was standing in the canal end in the famous time that Kerry beat Dublin in the 1978 final. And yeah, the famous Mike Sheehy free, which went in over Paddy Cullen's head, and that famous line where he described it as a woman who'd returned to find her a cake burning in her kitchen, and that kind of prose that he was able to produce, which was unique. But again, that came from his ability to watch games in a completely different way of light.
Yeah, it really was. Frank, really good morning to you, and thanks for joining us in the program this morning.
Yeah, it's a pure delight to be able to celebrate Con's 100th birthday, a special weekend.
Yeah, it certainly is, that's for sure. Now, you knew him for many years. He wrote brilliantly on athletics, all sports really. He loved all sports.
He did, and I met him first at 1979 cross country, when John Tracy famously won the world cross country title in Limerick. And I had seen him from a distance before, and I was always in awe of him. And you'd see him around Dublin, you know, when the evening press was hit the streets, kind of be rambling down towards the local down to Mulligan's pub or somewhere like that. And I was in totally awe of him. And I met him that day, and you know, the way he described that day, John Tracy, and there were thousands of people there in Limerick Racecourse, and he wrote like the following day. He wrote, "On and on he went, until into the mist and rain, He was away out in front, like Tide Cottage in the first three quarters of the Gold Cup. And like Tide Cottage, he came down, but it was only a slip at a splashy bend. And in a few seconds, only his muddy knees reminded one of it. In the last mile, as the purple pole Malinowski began to make up ground, he seemed like a leading dog in a very scattered pack. But the magic fox never looked like being caught. His biggest danger was the tumult of small boys that went out like tugboats to meet him. And I wonder if some of them small boys this morning might remember that famous day as well. But nobody could have described the magic of it as well as Con.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely incredible. Frank, he left, he learned his trade at the Kerry Men. He left, went to Dublin, and his back page column, the flagship column really of the evening press, was just, it was required reading from everyone. And I know it absolutely broke his heart when the press group closed. Burkey was his heartland, indeed. Really.
Indeed. I wrote the introduction to his last book, which was called A Harvest. And that was all about writers and about artists, because he did a great series as well in the Evening Press called Tributaries. And I was writing on that, and I was saying in small towns all over Ireland, people used to wait in the evenings outside local newsagents. And if you asked them what they were waiting for, young fellows coming home from work and stuff, and they were waiting for the van that was delivering the press, and that said they were waiting for Hoolan. And indeed, Jimmy Dean did him proud with that great documentary of the same name. There's a great TV documentary on Con called Waiting for Hoolan as well. So people were waiting for his three times a week. They were waiting for that in small villages and towns around the country, because they get the evening press. They probably wouldn't read it on the spot. They'd bring it home and have to read it over their tea in the evening. And he was essential reading for anybody who had even a smidgen of an interest in sport, because he brought you more than the game, you know.
Yeah, he certainly did. He was able to paint an amazing picture of what happened and the drama of it all on any particular day. Jimmy Deanhan, good morning to you.
Good morning, Gerry.
And listen, tell me a little bit about that documentary, and I suppose looking back now, how important it was that you got it done at the time.
Well, it certainly was, but I was listening to Frank there, and how Con described that great race, John Tracy's great win in the World Cross-Country Championship, but he also kind of immortalized the local greyhound here called Master Miles, for example, and I think it went along at Conmel when he won the Derby in Conmel. He wrote as follows, mightn't be exact now, but it goes as follows. Frank reminded me of how he described the sport and event, but he said about Master Miles, at Panel, he stormed away with the Derby, watched by a multitude who knew they were watching a greyhound, the likes of which had never been seen before and almost certainly will never be seen again. And I remember being with Con down below in Abbey Field at Con na Féile, and Master Miles again won that day, but there were thousands of people there. And Con described it the following day. It was as if Frank Sinatra, Georgie Best and Mick O'Connell was in town. They all came to see all these people, but they all came to see Master Miles. So he was a master at, you know, writing about sporting events, as we know. But also about, regarding that particular documentary that I was involved in, Morris Healy produced it. I kind of helped with the direction and so on of it as well at that time, and I got the money for it. But it was based on an earlier one, The Wheels of the World, and that was a short documentary that was scripted by Con himself and was narrated by Eamon Keane and edited by Morris Healy. But we were very fortunate because RTE, they wouldn't be interested in doing a documentary on Con because they thought that people wouldn't understand his accent. This was the reason why they gave at the time. And it was refused on four occasions. And Morris called me and he said, Jimmy, he said, Con is getting older. This is not going to happen. So I asked Morris to get me four or five friends of Con, including people like Charlie Chalk, and I got on to Frank Hill of Kerry Group, and I had 30 grand got in a few hours, and we went back to RTE with a rough cut, and then they sponsored it, and Joe Daly gave huge sponsorship to it. So that's how it happened. And then from that, we put up that bust of Conn's in Castle Island, looking at the Latin Quarter that he used to refer to. So anyway, the rest is history, as the man would say.
Yeah, amazing. Listen, stay with us, gentlemen. We're going to talk a bit more about Conn and his legacy. If anyone has their own memories of pieces that he wrote or him, we'd love to hear from you on the programme. We'll have more on Remembering Conn Hoolan after we take these. Yeah, keep your comments, views and opinions coming into us on the programme. Donal Murphy, Not the Gospel Historical Society, gets in touch regarding Conn Hoolan. Donal was the first chairman of the Commemoration Committee to hold the annual tribute for Conn in Castle Island. Tom gets in touch this morning and says, Conn Hoolan was one of a kind. I remember him playing rugby for Castle Island barefoot when Maurice Fitzgerald was a sub in an All-Ireland and came on late and changed the game. I met him after the game and he said, why would you keep a Van Gogh in the attic, Tom? There you go, Ian. That's Conn Hoolan for you. That's the sort of language he used in everyday life.
Yeah, and I was just thinking there. I mean, I was very lucky. I only met Conn, dare I say, kind of later in his life. I mean, I'd never gone drinking with him in Mulligan's or the Swan or anything like that. And it was actually through Frank Reilly to first introduce me. I mean, I'd known Conn, but I didn't. I wouldn't have been totally aware, I suppose, of some of his history. But so when I got to know him then, I mean, he was a giant of a man, as people would know. But he was also incredibly gentle and kind and generous. And he was also quite shy. And he had a beautiful house there in Portobello in Martin Street. So I'd call around the odd evening, and you might get a bottle of cheap red wine, like Yellowtail or anything like that was fine for Conn. And there was no such thing as a wine glass in the house, so he'd be drinking out of mugs, basically. But he'd eventually loosen up then, and that's when he'd start telling stories, I suppose. And he had so many great stories about where he traveled, how he traveled the world and all the places he'd been. And, of course, the famous line about the World Cup in Italia 90. He said he missed Italia 90 because he was away at the World Cup. And he was at the Barcelona Olympics as well in 1992. And I remember my own dad, Tom, talking about how Conn would be going round in the middle of July and it'd be 40 degrees and Conn would be wearing his red anorak and long black trousers and still scooping up stories like that. So he was so unique, but as I say, incredibly generous, and he took a great interest in young journalists like myself. And he was a huge influence like that, and in a kind of a very subtle way. I didn't realize it, but he was always kind of looking out and offering little hints of advice. And I'd never left the house without getting a book of some sort. He would always pass on. I mean, he had a house full of books, but he was always giving books away. And have you read this book? And that's where he turned me on to, obviously, not just sports writers, but he had a great love of American writing and English writing and things like that. So, I mean, talk about influences. I mean, he was so unique like that. And I think if there's anybody looking to learn anything about journalism today, I strongly suggest you start with some of Conn's collections, which I think are still available out there somewhere.
Yeah. Indeed. Well, listen, we're going to play a clip now from one of his most famous articles. This is after the 1978 All-Ireland and that famous goal of Mikey Sheehy's.
If a man who fishes for salmon with a stake net had seen his cordage dance as often as Paddy Cullen did in this astonishing All-Ireland final, he would have been very happy with his day's work. But there's an immensity of difference between bending to take out a salmon and stooping to pick up a ball that has got past you. And for long years to come, Paddy will now and then rack his brains and try to find out what happened to him yesterday. At about 20-4, he'd every reason to feel that his bowl of glory was about to flow over. Dublin were playing as if determined to get a patent for a new brand of Gaelic football, and Paddy himself was ruling his territory with a style and authority redolent of Bat Masterson. The many Kerry battalions in the crowd were as apprehensive as accursed men waiting for the jury to return after an unfavourable summing up against them. And well they might, because in the first third of what was surely the most extraordinary final since Michael Cusack codified the rules of Gaelic football, their team seemed faced not only with defeat, but humiliation. The blue and navy favours danced in the wet grey air. The hill revelled and licked its lips at the prospect of seeing Kerry butchered to make a Dublin holiday. They roared as the point sailed over, and one felt that they were only flexing their vocal muscles so that they might explode when Charlie Nelligan's net bulged. But perhaps it is true that whom the gods wish to destroy, they first make mad. These with which Dublin were scaling the mountain seduced them into overconfidence. Paddy Cullen is a modern keeper. He guards not only the goal, but its forecourt. and it was one of the ironies of a game that might have been scripted by the King of Gremlins, that now he was caught too far back. He advanced desperately, but Johnny Egan held the big trump, and he coolly fisted the ball over the keeper and into the net. That goal affected Kerry, as a May shower, a languishing field of corn. Soon, a few Kerry points had put them at the very foot. Then Dublin went ahead with a point, and now came the moment that will go into that Department of Sports Museum where abide such strange happenings as the long count and the goal that gave Cardiff their only England FA Cup and the fall of Devon Locke. Its run-up began with a free from John O'Keefe. Jack O'Shea made a flying catch and drove a long ball towards the middle of the 21-yard line. Mike Sheehy's fist put it behind the backs. Paddy Cullen comfortably played the ball with his feet away from Sheehy. He had an abundance of time and space in which to lift and clear, but his pickup was a dubious one, and the referee, Seamus Aldridge, decided against him. Or maybe he deemed his meeting with Ger Power illegal. Whatever the reason, Paddy put on a show of righteous indignation, throwing up his hands to heaven as the referee kept pointing towards the goal. And while all this was going on, Mike Sheehy was running up to take the kick, and suddenly Paddy dashed back towards his goal like a woman who smells a cake burning. The ball won the race, and it curled inside the near post as Paddy crashed into the outside of the net and lay against it like a fireman who'd returned to find his station ablaze. The hill watched, as lively as the main street of Knocknagoshal on Good Friday.
Yeah, there you go. That's an excerpt from that brilliant column. And Jimmy Dean, and like, that was a famous moment and will always be a famous moment in the history of All-Ireland finals, but it was made more famous and kind of immortalised, really, by that column. That was the ability of Con to be able to record and like that, immortalise those moments.
Absolutely. And for the first, I suppose, 20 minutes of that game, Dublin were all over us. And I think they were leading 6-1. And the full back line, myself, John O'Keefe, Mike Spillane, like, we were under desperate pressure. And we didn't think that we could hold out, because Dublin was storming at us. And what happened, really, Bobby Kelleher, who was a cornerback, Robbie Kelleher, came up and had a shot at goals. Like, that time, cornerbacks didn't go beyond their own 50-yard line anyway, or 21-yard line. But Dublin were just swarming all over. But Con really captures it there. Actually, I never heard that description before. So he really captured that first third of the game when Dublin were all
brilliantly
over. And it was that bit of genius, first of all by John Egan, but then by Mickey Sheehy, of course, that just changed the whole game and the history of football, Gaelic football, at that particular time, because we went down then and won 4 in a row, whereas Dublin, I suppose, went on the slide after that, that particular team. But he captured those moments so well. He was quite unique in that sense. And also, we always went to Mulligan's the Monday after an All-Ireland semi-final final to meet Con. A few of us would go, because the final verdict wasn't really out there until we met Con and got his verdict on the game and his sum up of the game. So he was very much part of that whole, no more than Tom O'Riordan, actually, Ian's father. He was very much part of that whole time and history of that particular time. And he had a great connection with that Kerry team.
He really did. And Frank, when you talk about being there to describe games, the modern world, it's all video, audio now, it's all websites, it's the game has changed from the point of view of people feel they can be there, they can watch the video back instantly on their phones. But there's still room, I think, like, the reason why you send journalists to a game, or you send people to an Olympics or a race or whatever it is to be able to describe it for the people who can't be there. And there's a skill which he had in abundance.
And Con, he'd go to a few pubs afterwards for a few soundings after a game, and then he'd ramble home. But he had a terrific work ethic. He was up most mornings at about 4:30, and he had his column done about 7:00. And so when he went into the evening press, he had his day's work done. So he did a lot of soundings with the fans and stuff as well. And nowadays, you know, as I say, people waited in the small towns and villages for the evening press to come in around 5 or 6 o'clock in the evening. And that was their way to savour the game and to see what Con was writing about. Now, as you say, it has to be instant, you know. And I don't think we're that much better for that.
Better for us.
We don't get to the end. And again, modern newspaper journalism, the writers nowadays have to feed the great monster, that's the internet and stuff.
Social media.
They're multitasking. Yeah. There isn't that much time to sit and write a really decent piece.
Yeah, and absorb what's going on. You met him finally, Frank. You met him in St. James Hospital. You visited him in July 2012, just before you went to the Olympics. What did he tell you?
Well, at the time, a man that should be mentioned as well was Phelan Kelly, a great friend of mine. He used to take down Conn's dictation for the last 2 years in St. James's. He said to me, I'm on the last slope, he said, and we probably won't meet again. And Conn always said that the last time are three of the most poignant words in any language, and he was right, you know. So when I came back from the London Olympics, sure enough, Conn died while I was away. I set up an event in Dublin called the Remembrance Run in his name. It has choirs, music, poetry, song, and we had 4,000 people there on the 12th, on the second Sunday in November this year. So that in itself, I think, is a tribute to his memory.
That's absolutely brilliant. Yeah, he said you'll get along without me, but maybe not as well.
That was what he used to say to Phelan and myself. You'll get along without me, but maybe not as well.
Absolutely
and
brilliant.
You know, he was so I think Eno Reardon will definitely empathise with that as well, because Ian was a great friend to him and Conn had great regard for him.
Yeah.
And indeed, it's great to hear Tom O'Reardon mentioned this morning as well.
Yeah.
Another outstanding journalist from Kerry.
Yeah, indeed. Listener says, my favourite quote of Conn's is as follows. He was explaining the shock you get by something not happening. He wrote it as he was passing through. He said it was like passing through Abbey Field and not seeing someone walking a greyhound. And he was perfectly right. You'd always see someone walking a greyhound as well. Ian, that's a tribute to him. Another tribute to him, I suppose. His ability with language, the way he used it, the way he got people thinking about sport. And also, even with that, like his descriptions of rural life finally as well were just amazing. He catalogued so much more than sport in his writing.
It is, Gerry. We could go on all day. I mean, there's so many great things to say about Conn, and he was unique. But I think that's why it is important to remember him on days like today or tomorrow on the centenary. But I mean, he was very smart as well. I mean, he had some great quotes like that. But he could be also twist those words sometimes as well. And if he didn't like you, for example, you know, people say, you know, gone but not forgotten. But Conn could turn that around and say, forgotten but not gone. So he was well able to twist those words if he didn't take a fancy to somebody. But no, so unique. I mean, I'll be quoting Conn for as long as I can anyway, that's for sure.
Yeah. Well, brilliant stuff. Well, gentlemen, thanks a million Frank?
Liam O'Neill is unveiling a portrait of Conn at 1 o'clock in the Palace Bar on Sunday.
So brilliant.
So that'll be a big event as well. So that's a nice one.
Yeah, 1 o'clock in the Palace Bar on Sunday. Brilliant stuff. That's fantastic. My own favourite quote of Conn's, one of the many, is a man who'll misuse an apostrophe is capable of anything, which I think is just absolutely genius. Ian, Frank and Jimmy, thanks so much for talking to us and remembering Conn Hoolan this morning. Loads of comments coming in with people's own memories of him and his brilliant writings. We'll talk about that and more on the way, but thanks for talking to us on the programme this morning. On the way on Kerry Today, we've the Heat Doctor.